Today we're looking at James 5, 7 to 11, all about patience. Here's what James says. Be patient then, my friends, until the Lord comes. See how patient farmers are as they wait for their land to produce precious crops. They wait patiently for the autumn and spring rains. You also must be patient. Keep your hopes high, for the day of the Lord's coming is near. Do not complain against one another, my friends, so that God will not judge you. The judge is near, ready to appear. My friends, remember the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Take them as an example of patient endurance under suffering. We call them happy because they endured. You've heard of Job's patience, and you know how the Lord provided for him in the end. For the Lord is full of mercy and compassion. Some years ago, one of my Baptist minister colleagues started dating a woman from out of town. At that time, we used to have a joint evening service every month, and I would reckon to get to most of them. On this occasion, I met my colleague's new woman and said, "Pleased to meet you." She looked at me angrily, unable to believe that I had forgotten her so soon after meeting her. These days, I do worry about my memory, but this was almost 30 years ago, and I was pretty sure I hadn't met her. So she reminded me of the previous joint service and what we talked about. Still, the penny didn't drop. And then later I remembered that I'd missed that particular service. And then it occurred to me that she might have spoken to another colleague, Paul, who was the same height as me and crucially also bald-headed. I checked with him and sure enough, she got us mixed up. I felt a little hard done by in the circumstances, case of mistaken identity. Now others have had that far worse. The case of Adolf Beck is a celebrated one. He was picked out in an identity parade as someone who had swindled numerous women out of their jewellery. He protested his innocence but was found guilty and served 5 years. After his release, he was accused again, only this time the police chanced upon his doppelganger, and this time justice was done. Beck was compensated £2,000, but he lost 5 years of his life. Last week, I was listening to the story of Anthony Ray Hinton, an African-American from Alabama who was wrongly found guilty of two murders. Policemen who arrested allegedly told him, "You will be prosecuted by a white man, found guilty by a white jury, and condemned by a white judge. You will be convicted, convicted, convicted." Sure enough, he was. Hinton spent 28 years on death row before the evidence was eventually reassessed and thrown out. The state of Alabama has never apologised to this day. All of them cases of mistaken identity, but more importantly, two of them deeply unfair. My experience can't be compared to the experience of the other two. Hinton spent his 30s, 40s and 50s behind bars, half of his life taken from him. His mother had raised him and knew he would not have committed those crimes, but sadly she didn't live to see his release. Life has been very unfair to some people, and although that old chorus, "Count your blessings, name them one by one," can sound a bit glib, maybe the rest of us should do that more often. There's something in our DNA which expects fairness, and yet life is not fair. If you're born in Haiti or Niger, your prospects are limited at best. Motivational speakers may tell you that you can be whatever you want to be, but actually there's not much evidence of that working in countries like those. And as you read the Old Testament, there's a developing theology. The covenant promise of Deuteronomy 28-29 suggests that if you obey God, he will bless you. Popular message these days. Read on to the book of Proverbs and you will be told that you reap what you sow. So far, so consistent. But then Ecclesiastes tells you that it's not always that simple, and Job regales you with the story of a good man who lost everything. If God called you to be a prophet back then, you took a deep breath because you knew it would cost you. Life is not straightforward. It's not fair. And then even in the New Testament, as you look at the lives of the early Christians, you realise that obedience to Christ could have very negative consequences. So our passage is about patience, which is a quality you're going to need if life is unfair. It's an interesting word. To be patient is something to aspire to. But to be a patient in a hospital is not something anybody wants. Both meanings actually come from the Latin word for suffering. So when you suffer persecution or unfair treatment, says James, be patient. James tells you to do two things in these verses. look forward in verses 7 to 9 is the first one. You'll remember that the previous passage was about money and the injustices of wealth and poverty. And so James says, be patient. But he doesn't say that the world is getting better. He says, be patient until the Lord's coming. It will take a moment of divine intervention for things to change and for justice to be established. He uses nature as an illustration. The farmer learns to wait. Autumn rains soften the soil and spring rains fatten the crop. You can't speed up these processes. You have to be patient. Earlier generations of Christians understood this principle better, but our credit-based culture is shaping a different sort of person. Credit means that you can have something now and pay later. And in the church, there's been a kind of credit theology where the simple equation, do the right thing and God will bless you, offers you an attractive alternative to patient endurance. But the New Testament actually says, do the right thing and God will reward you when Christ returns. Some have twisted the message so that now many people are looking for an instant return rather than the Lord's return. We might also find parallels in the coronavirus amid signs that case numbers are once again on the rise. We were all told to socially distance ourselves, to go out once a day for essential shopping and a second time for some exercise. But we soon became impatient with the inconvenience and lots of people ignored the government's instructions. Leicester was just about to reopen for business last month and then it had to lock down again. This virus apparently thrives in colder conditions, so if there's a second spike this autumn, the consequences could be bad. When the government said wear masks in shops recently, we went to Iceland and it seemed like one in three people hadn't been listening or thought they knew better. Waiting for an effective vaccine usually takes years, but we're in a hurry. So if we want a good vaccine and economic recovery as well, I suspect we need to be patient and follow instructions. And we also get impatient with people. They don't do things the way we do, and that tends to annoy us. So we have a moan about them, usually behind their backs, but apparently I'm told it's more virtuous to do it to their faces. James just says, don't complain against one another, my friends, so that God won't judge you. So in practice, how do we learn patience? I mean, everyone says, whenever you ask them what you need most, they say, I need more patience. Now, there's all sorts of advice online, but one that caught my attention was that we're in the habit of satisfying our cravings immediately. Instant gratification is the phrase they use. We fancy some chocolate, so we go and get some. We want new clothes. Westfield's right there. The average credit debt for UK households is between £2,500 and £3,000. Then we want sex. So why wait for true love? We're in danger of forgetting first principles. The art of self-denial or simply waiting a bit has been lost. Sometimes there are no quick solutions to complex situations. There's a lovely old prayer written by the 20th century American theologian Reinhold Niebuhr. The popular version reads like this: Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I must, and the wisdom to know the difference. Lack of patience, says James, manifests itself in grumbling. It's not a mark of godliness, and it can drag a church right down as different factions vie for influence over what is happening. So look forward, James says. But then in verses 10 to 11, he says, look backward. James reminds us of our heritage. The people we most admire worked patiently to achieve their goals. John Hume, whose tireless campaigning and negotiating in Ireland paved the way for the Good Friday Agreement, died last week. The previous week, Americans remembered the life of John Lewis, lifelong civil rights campaigner who died at the height of the current Black Lives Matter protests. So much further to go. There's a long list of prophets in Hebrews 11 who lived for things that were never achieved in their lifetime. My friend, says James, remember these prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Take them as examples of patient endurance under suffering. And all these words are routinely linked together: unfairness, suffering, endurance, patience. Job is also mentioned. His life had a happier ending, but he had to endure not only the loss of his children and his belongings, but also the third-rate advice of his friends. He was grappling with deeper stuff than any of them had ever encountered. Micaiah is one of my favourite prophets. His brief moment in the spotlight is recounted in 1 Kings 22 and 2 Chronicles 18. At that time, the godless King Ahab ruled Israel and Jehoshaphat was king of Judah. Ahab wanted to go to war against an enemy and wanted Jehoshaphat's support, but the king of Judah wanted God's view. So Ahab brought in his 400 prophets, all of whom said, "Thus says the Lord, go into battle and you will emerge triumphant." Jehoshaphat could tell they weren't true prophets, so he asked, "Is there no longer a prophet of the Lord in Israel that we can ask?" Begrudgingly, Ahab summoned Micaiah. The king's messenger told him the situation and advised him not to say anything negative. But Micaiah said, "I can only say what God gives me." And what he said was, "If you go into battle, you will not return alive." Ahab, not to be outdone, gave instructions for Micaiah to be imprisoned on a diet of bread and water and only to be released on his safe return from battle. He then went into battle and died, and the fate of Micaiah is never disclosed in the Bible. The cost of faithfulness was very high. These great figures from the past are remembered not for their accomplishments, but for their character and for their patient endurance. Patience is there as one of the nine fruits of the Spirit, and it was certainly evident in Jesus' life. When he was crucified, he could have called down 12 legions of angels and opted for an easier path. But in his quest to save the human race, he patiently endured the suffering that should have been ours. Isaiah 53, the Old Testament text most commonly quoted by New Testament writers and seen as fulfilled in Jesus, describes with graphic detail the suffering he endured. Many of you will remember the evocative language of verse 11 in the King James Version. "He shall see the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied." So, may we learn patience. Aristotle said, "Patience is bitter, but its fruit is sweet." Gandhi said, "To lose patience is to lose the battle." We should probably take note of George Jackson's words, "Patience has its limits. Take it too far and it's cowardice." And I saw this one last week. "You can't calm the storm, so stop trying. What you can do is calm yourself. The storm will pass." May God help us all in our quest to be like Jesus.